KCBS News Time 9:32. This portion of the news sponsored by the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer.
As many as 1.3 billion people in the world lack access to electrical power. Arizona State's Laboratory for Energy and Power Solutions, or LEAPS, is helping to change that by advancing microgrid technology to a more technical and economically viable option. For more, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Nathan Johnson. He's an assistant professor at ASU and director of LEAPS. Professor Johnson, thanks for joining us this morning. Let's start at the very bottom. What is microgrid technology?
Well, thanks for having me on today, and I appreciate the question. Microgrid technologies in the formal sense today are focused on a single electrical circuit that has a combined set of generation and loads that can be disconnected from the grid at will. Typical examples include hospitals, casinos, potentially military bases or campuses. But if you look back at the history of how the electrical grids were formed, everything essentially started as a microgrid, and so off-grid villages, farming plantations, mines, et cetera, around the world, that slowly grew larger and grew together to form the larger national grids that we see around the world today.
So in a way, the talk of a microgrid is back to the future, rolling the concept back to the way we once dealt with power, which was to make it and use it on a fairly local basis.
That's quite true, and I am a professor, and while I can't speak to the quality of the hairstyles that maybe Doc Brown brought to the stage, but that is exactly correct, is we're utilizing some of the old techniques, advancing the technologies that we have today, and trying to create a more distributed architecture that is more resilient to natural disasters, earthquakes, or even kinetic and cyber attacks, and looking for increased security.
You know, I mentioned leading into you that you folks were working on a more technical and economically viable option. What does that entail? What needs to be done to make it more economically viable?
Very, very good question. Well, a couple of things in this thing comes up is that when you've seen one microgrid, you've seen one microgrid. They're all different. And so first of all, we focus on hastening the design process by about 80 to 90% to reduce the soft cost of engineering design with our corporate partners, Indy, out in San Diego. The second thing is after we've hastened the design process, we realize that after the decline of solar and storage technologies, the actual how you put it together or the microgrid controller becomes a larger share of the overall cost. And so therefore, we look to decrease the cost of the microgrid controller and the power electronics by about 50 to 80%. And then after that comes how fast can you put it down and install the system, coming to the installation integration of it. And that's where we look at more turnkey systems, which combine and leverage the benefits of the design process and microgrid controller with our other corporate partner, FastGrid, out of Arizona, that looks at turnkey infrastructures for both on-grid and off-grid applications.
So here's the curiosity I have about changing from the great big grid with power that may come from far, far away. You know, New England has this massive problem right now. They are talking seriously about a future that may include rolling blackouts because they don't have enough generating capacity. They are having a hard time building the long lines. They need to move it in from Canada. Is this the answer to those problems as well?
It can be. It's interesting when you bring up that experience of rolling blackouts. As I spent about 2 years internationally living and working in rural villages, but then also urban areas, it reminds me of about 10 years ago when I was in Johannesburg, South Africa, and even living and working in 3-, 4-, and 5-star hotels, is you'd be blacked out for 8 to 12 or even larger portions of the day without power. And so if you look at that and you try to think of, well, how can you live and then how can you create a vibrant economy? I mean, you really cripple the infrastructure, not to mention the folks that rely on electrical power to even maintain basic human health, such as dialysis, et cetera. So as you look at breaking up the infrastructure, putting more generation locally of where the loads potentially be, it provides potential economic benefits of instead of installing larger capital systems like increased wire length, but then additionally providing and decreasing the losses that occur on the electrical grid by generating the power closer to the loads.
So how long till one of those remote villages can get the pay-per-view heavyweight boxing fight?
That's a really good question. Well, we've already electrified a few dozen villages, and our larger partnership and network is up into the tens of millions of people that have been electrified. And so you have the electricity. You know, people start with lights, and they start with phones, and it goes to radios, and then all of a sudden it's, how soon can I get on Facebook? And while we provide access to electricity to meet basic needs, the next thing is, well, how do I have the lifestyle I want to lead? And then also, how do I create a business around it? And so it's interesting you ask that question about the heavyweight boxing. boxing, but you know, more typically what you'd see in international setting is actually football, which we know is soccer here. So then you have people that might be paying 1 to 2 to 5 cents to go watch a soccer game, an international match such as a World Cup, for a couple hours. And then it creates a local economy that then grows and sustains and then is what exactly what we want to help lift people out of poverty.
We appreciate your time this morning. Nathan Johnson, assistant professor at Arizona State University and director of the school's Laboratory for Energy and Power Solutions, known as LEAPS.
KCBS News Time, 9:37.